you really have to like at least know high level what a venture team would want ideally versus like innovation. And then you just learn everything else. Like you have your stuff in your head, you ask if that's correct, and then you get some feedback and go from there.
Hi, I'm Mark Gagne.
And I'm Chris Corcoran, and you're listening to Tech Sales is for Hustlers. Tech Sales for Hustlers is a podcast where we catch up with Memory Blue alums and reminisce about their start in high-tech sales with us.
Let's go get some, Corcoran.
Gagne, you know I'm ready.
Sadie Kniper, coming at us live and direct for New York City and the Greenpoint neighborhood in the borough of Brooklyn. Sadie, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Sadie, it's been a long time.
It has.
Let me introduce you properly to the audience here. So, first of all, your Memory Blue days, you were straight up baller. Second, recent Alum of the Year semifinalist. We'll get into that. You're now living in Brooklyn, as Chris so eloquently stated. Most importantly, for some, you're a PVI alum.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about this. Were you a Virginia State champion of free throws in fifth grade?
Yeah, I was trying to think of facts about myself that are interesting. And that's when I peaked, so had to put that
right down. All right, we'll get into it. Well, welcome. Chris and I are thrilled to have you.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. It's good to see you guys again. It only took the alumni thing to connect again.
Well, you know what? Better late than never.
That's true.
All right. So let's do this. So the people listening, right, people who work here now, people who are thinking about coming to work at Memory Blue, and some of your colleagues from your golden days, Memory Blue time, and others, share with you a little bit about yourself, kind of where you grew up, that sort of thing. Walk us through kind of that, high school, college briefly, and then we'll kind of get into it.
Cool. So I grew up in Northern Virginia. So been there all my life. Bounced around. So when people ask me like where I'm from, I don't know what to say. I've lived everywhere from like Centerville to Fairfax to Leesburg to Falls Church. And I don't have I'm not a military brat. So I don't know. I don't know what happens. But yeah, so grew up in Northern Virginia. I was here up into high school. You mentioned PVI. I went to high school at PVI. At
yep.
Bradford University. So went yep. to Southern Virginia.
Highlanders.
Highlanders, yeah. The mascot is plaid. He's wearing plaid. It's cool, I guess. So yeah, I did that. And then I moved to New York after Memory Blue, of course. But I think I was 24, maybe. I'm trying to think how long I've been here. Yeah.
Well, let's get into that. So when you were in college, what'd you major in?
I majored in marketing and beer. No, just marketing.
You were at Bradford. Yes.
Yeah, so, it's a good time.
Marketing, what do you think you're going to do when you're a senior at Bradford? What do you think you're going to do when you got out of school?
Yeah, in a perfect world, I would be some sort of in music or TV, behind the camera maybe. But with regards to marketing, kind of what I was thinking of, I really liked market research. I loved like the consumer like mind behind why you buy something, why you like something, how you develop like strong brand recognition and retain people. So if you think of like Jeep or something, Costco. So like different successes like that. I loved those classes. Now, if I could be in Mad Men, like those times is the advertising I liked, but I'm not that into the advertising currently anymore. It's just, I don't think I can be as passionate about it. So I was, you know, kind of transferred into like the sales thought process. I could always, you know, see myself in sales. I don't know if you can major in that, not at marketing. I mean, not at Radford. So, but yeah, I think that's kind of how I transitioned sort of into sales.
And what did you see this? Was there anything about Sadie in like high school PVI or college or early that maybe the sales thing might be something I might be good at?
I could throw a good party. That's organization, planning, and persistence.
Right.
Now, the other thing is, so I have three brothers, and not that all boys like sports. I probably know more about certain things than they do. At least two out of three of them.
Did you play sports at PVI, right? Yeah. We talked about it. What'd you play?
Yeah. So I played basketball and I played soccer like all throughout my life, but I didn't play in high school. I play any sport for fun. My brothers and I were playing lacrosse like outside. Nick would pick me for football before the other two boys, my oldest brother. I can throw a football, mean football. So I think sports in general, though, when you have that competitive mentality. You also are working on a team, so you're learning that, how to work with people. That definitely led me to probably some of like the way I am like in sales day to day, just being with people, like just talking to people. I don't know. So yeah, I think sports definitely big kind of ticker for me getting into sales.
Is there anything else? That's good, but.
Is there anything else? Okay, so I'm a charmer maybe. I didn't know this, but I kind of just act like myself during sales. It's actually pretty, not therapeutic, but it's pretty relieving in a way. I think a lot of people think like sales is like fakey and pushy. I could be pushy like sometimes on a deal, but it's very realistically me during that time. So I don't know. It's kind of relieving to act like myself daily.
We want to get into that. We want to get that. All right. So you got out of Radford, marketing major. What happened then? Like, how did you end up at Memory Blue? Was there anything in between or?
Yeah, that's a good question. There is something in between. Aflac, pretty wild. So they're commission only. I was really just kind of interviewing at a lot of jobs. I didn't want to take them. It was a lot of outside sales, selling printers and things like that. Not that that's bad, but I was really not trying to go there. So I did Aflac, but truly it was just kind of while I was trying to find something else out of college. I found you guys, I'm trying to remember, because it was through reading initially. So I think it was through reading and finding you on LinkedIn. Thought the company, like the pitch was so cool. Like the idea of like, then your client could potentially hire you out. I don't know. It was so interesting. Then I find Robbie Connors works there and Lauren Mattelmeyer. And I was like, what?
And Mattelmeyer, that's right. Wow. PVI posse. Okay.
I reached out to Robbie for sure. I think Lauren probably too. Said, do you like this place? What's up with it? Like, give me the lowdown. Robbie, of course, total lover of Memory Blue. Just killing it for me. Like, just everything nice to say. I'm like, tell me some dirt, man. But no, it was great. Like, did he get the referral money? I hope I hooked him up with that.
He might have. But it's all right. This is December 2014. So it was a while ago.
That's true. And I remember I had my notes out for the interview before I went in. I was at Panera eating my broccoli cheddar soup, having a great time. But I was like, geez, I got to like get this down because I really wanted to work at Memory Blue. So yeah, that's the story there.
All right. And you came in and then what do you remember from the early days? So you started right around the new year, looks like.
You don't remember this by heart?
I don't. I'm so sorry. That's why I don't get invited to any of your parties that you throw. Because I don't remember any of this stuff.
Back in the day, maybe. Not anymore.
Not anymore.
But yeah, so the early days, that is an interesting question. So I was next to Robbie, I think. Actually, I'm going to go back to like the first day. I was very quiet. This is how I always am.
Yeah.
What I sort of observe, but I think I'm like brutally quiet where it's like very confusing because then now you know me and you're like, what? Like 30 days in.
Yeah.
But I know Joey Cohen. He was like,
okay.
There's a couple other people, Lauren Montross, she was near me. So I was observing, trying to figure it out. I wasn't at the Boone office at the time. I was at the regular.
Free Boone. Okay.
I like Boone way better.
I know. We'll talk about that.
But yeah, so I was just observing, kind of figuring things out, cold calls, all of that, like listening into people, figuring out like who I would work with as clients, just kind of trying to first onboarding things, typical. But then, I got more comfortable for sure. I had Lee as a delivery manager.
Lee Ryan.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was cool. But yeah, just learning a lot and being quiet and a weirdo for the first 30 days probably.
What do you remember? Like, so when you got on the phone, because I definitely remember you being yourself, but I remember you being a hard worker and you were there the 15 months right before you moved up to New York and got converted. What was it like getting on the phones? Like, did you kind of know what you were going to be doing?
Yeah, that's a great question because, first of all, I was there 15 months just because, I wanted to be,
Of course.
I'm just kidding. All right, so Oracle. Anyway, so on the phones, this is a great question because this is something that I really nailed down and used on every call. You guys are going to have to remind me what it's called, but it's when you say something like, now, typically when we talk to XYZ, they do 1, 2, 3, or they care about 1, 2, 3. What did you guys call that?
The a la carte.
Lemonade? Oh, yeah. Okay. A la carte.
No, the a la carte. It's like typically when I talk to people in your position, the conversation centers around this, that, or this. And we give you a choice, right?
They want steak, potatoes.
Yes.
Okay, cool. So that really worked for me. I don't know what it was. Yeah. So I did it on almost every call. So I would walk away because I like to strut, but I also like don't really care for people like stalking me on the phone. So I strut down the hall of Boone. I come back in and I got a meeting. Robbie's like, what is what did you just do? Dan Bohr's like, so I did a lot of that on my calls. And yeah, you know, it didn't come right away. And I honestly probably made some fake dials. I'm sorry, guys, but I'm just calling Verizon. You're calling Verizon headquarters to get your numbers.
Like we said, Sadie, 15 months.
15, yeah, for real, 15 months. But the reason I could hit quota was truly off of like emails and calls. You call your VIPs and you do some emails, which was tough. I was tracking everything on an Excel sheet. Emailed 414, emailed 416. It was crazy. Like, I don't know. That was wild.
You were part of the early days where we made everybody do a manual because this is before these cadence systems existed. And we felt sincerely that like you learned better that way, how to do it.
I agree.
So we don't train you to be an indoor cat. We train you to be an outdoor cat, right? The outbound person.
Yeah, you guys did it. You definitely contributed to how my organization isn't something that anyone else wants to look at, but it works for me. I have a second calendar that's hidden. So my SDRs obviously wouldn't be able to book anything if they saw my Sadie number two.
Right.
Pretty much looks like my Excel sheet. It's like everything, my to-do list, insane. So yeah, that comes from you guys, I think.
So would you say as you were kind of learning the game, did you learn it from like, you learned that from someone, did you learn from your colleagues? Did you learn from like call reviews or like how, what was your learning process like? If you can remember, take us back to that.
Yeah. You know, I remember those trainings that we did. Those are awesome. Like once a week, we'd get in the car and whip it. Like somebody was like, all right, everyone get in my car. That was awesome. I learned from those a lot. There's a lot of senior people that would talk during that time, trying to get some names, but
it's all right.
Wes for sure. And like some
of Wes.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember some other senior people. I know their faces.
Chris, they would get in the car. They'd go to training at Tech Corner?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. I forgot
your hot chocolate. That.
I forgot about that. Oh, that's right. That's right. They had like the nice condiments in their little hot chocolate area or whatever. Their little
yeah, I'm sure you guys have like machines now and stuff. Gosh.
You got to come back, Sadie, anytime. Hey, open invitation. We can get the 16 months. We can get there.
I got to come back. I got to come back. Definitely visit you guys. But yeah, so that was good, like those trainings. I learned a lot from, yeah, just listening to people's calls, talking about their processes. Like I was friends with a lot of people too. So people would complain. People would talk about like an awesome call when we were outside or something. So you learn a lot just from that too, I think. So I can think of like Yassine.
Yassine.
Phone. Like, yeah, he would just like kill it. I mean, he looked kind of like angry. His eyebrows are like furrowed while he's walking around. But he also like would be loud as hell because he wants everyone to hear him. That's his scene. But you still learn from the kid. So him, I was next to Robbie and he would constantly be asking about like LinkedIn strategies. We were talking about everything. So yeah, you learn from your peers. We didn't have a ton of tools at the time, again, like we talked about. So I think in a way that was good. You got to talk to people even more and learn some stuff. So
absolutely. What, I'm sorry, I'm running away with this in Corcoran. Feel free to topple me over.
No. Well, so Sadie, when did you migrate, the great migration from Old Courthouse Road to Boone Boulevard?
I'm trying to think about that because that was like a glory moment. It felt like, yeah. And I knew some people at Boone, I think. So I think Robbie was over there for sure. It was a good move for me. I can't remember them. I feel like it was just a couple months in and then I was over there.
Sadie, describe for our listeners the Boone experience.
The Boone experience. When did we get the kegerator? I'm trying to think about that.
Oh, geez. Mike Mishler.
Mike Mishler. He works on the place hard, that's for sure. The Boone experience, it was a little like hot in there. But
it was it was hot as hell.
So that was good. Yeah, it was an interesting experience. But we had a good setup. It would like go around kind of like so you could like walk around with your calls, and I don't know, I like that setup. You go outside, great cheesesteak at the deli, love that. But the Boone experience is great. There was a lot of people to learn from at Boone, like that had way different styles. So I think the group in there, it was just a good setup for me personally to learn from.
Heating up cold calls in Boone.
Heating up cold calls. I mean, literally it was hot, yeah.
Sadie, besides yourself, who's the best SDR you worked with? I mean, you dropped some talent there.
Besides myself, I was not. Yeah. Okay. Who's the best SDR at the time I was there? Okay. So I remember some names that were constantly hitting from the other side. Scott, something. I forget his name.
I don't remember. That's right. Go on.
Mark Logic. Inbound, though.
Oh.
All right. You can cut that if you need to.
No.
What do you mean by inbound? What do you mean?
Oh, come on, Mark. We talked about this. You're smiling. Inbound. I don't know the logistics of it. I just remember people kind of talking about it. And I was like, oh, okay. That's like 28 points.
You're traditionally on outbound accounts, like hardcore outbound.
Freaking Oracle, Mark. Like,
yeah.
Screen and SAN software.
Yeah. You're a hardcore. And then I remember now. That's right. We were talking about inbound versus outbound. There's a rivalry at Memory Blue. Mark Logic. Who was on Mark Logic?
Okay, so at the time, it was a guy, what was his name?
Frank Taylor?
So Frank Taylor, I definitely remember.
FT3?
Tan and with brown hair. Chris or
doesn't matter.
It does matter. I think he went to work there after, so I'm trying to think about who that was. But
oh, Connor Beebe went to work there. Mike Caney went to work there. I think they were after your time, though, some of these guys.
Yeah.
We kind of rolled through a couple different crews because people got new jobs. Yeah. All right, you were in Boone doing your thing. And then, so as you were at Memory Blue working, what did you think you were going to do? Like, I knew you were working for Fish Daddy, and you were doing well in your campaign. Because remember, you always hit your quota. You became a senior SDR, which is that you have to earn that, right? Right, got a bump in your base, did all the things you have to do, those things. What did you think you were going to do next? Like, did you kind of settle, hey, this sales thing is kind of cool. I'm done with that, even dreaming about advertising and marketing research or what?
No, I liked sales. Started liking sales for sure. Now, it's interesting because it's not like I necessarily loved what I was selling. I liked the vibe of sales, though. So, I mean, this is getting forward, and I won't address this holistically yet, but CB Insights, like, that's a product I love. So now I've found the happy two.
Yeah, we'll get to that. I mean, Chris is going to want to break that down for sure.
Yeah, but reversing back. So I did like sales. I learned that for sure. I think I probably always knew that, working with people. But yeah, what I wanted to do, I mean, I was looking at other companies too, because I was getting to that 15 months. So I was able to do that. But then NetX ultimately wanted to hire me. Now, I had the background of like the Oracle and things like that. So I thought I truly like was going to maybe want to pursue like the IT type sales. Not for me, it turns out. But yeah, I definitely was into sales. That's for sure. Now, ideally, I wanted to be in New York. Didn't know what kind of product I wanted to sell yet. Nothing like that.
But I remember these guys were they were a client, or did they come back and want to hire somebody who was leaving?
So they basically were like a partner for Oracle. So they third party sell. Yeah. But I don't know how they came in. Like,
So they came in, and I think you worked on it, and then you worked out. They said, hey, we want to hire you. We were like, do it. Because I know you wanted to get to New York. You and I talked about it. And you worked down in Northern Virginia for a little while, right? And then kind of felt it out. Then you moved up.
Yeah, 6 months.
Were they in Hoboken, or where were they?
They were in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. So if you think about where I'm at, Greenpoint up here, Bay Ridge is like literally you're approaching like getting close to Staten Island right across the bridge. Everyone was like, well, you worked in Bay Ridge? Like, there's an office there? Like, very, very confusing. But yeah. So it got me to New York.
But it got you to New York. And then, like, I know you learned some stuff there. You're there for a little while. Yeah. Then you like, what'd you learn there? What inspired you to go? Because they were like a hardcore bar for like storage stuff, right?
Yes. So I learned a lot, and I loved the guys. I loved the team. It gave me a lot of experience in terms of like person to person. Like, it was outside sales, essentially. Like, I was doing a lot of calling. I was trying to get leads. But we would go on the road a lot. I would go with Angelo. That was my boss. And I learned a ton from them. So yeah, the way Angelo like conducted a meeting when he walked in, like you could translate that to anything, to inside sales. It doesn't matter. He was the man, and it came so naturally. So yeah, I've always learned a ton. I loved my experience at NetX. Like, ultimately I was ready to move to a new type of solution and a new thing that like would be a better fit for me in terms of company size, things like that. They were very small. So, but great times at NetX, and very appreciative of that, for sure.
What happened next?
NetX, next. So next, I was looking at companies in New York. It's overwhelming. There's a ton of startups. They all seem to be like apps. I don't know what they do. So just kind of trying to learn from the website. So I end up finding CB Insights after a couple months through builtinnyc.com. It's a pretty cool website.
Mm-hmm.
Through like well-rated startups, things like that.
Yeah, we use it to source names to call for Memory Blue.
Oh, really?
No, yeah.
I like that.
Yep.
So yeah, I read about them. You go to a website, you still don't fully understand what a company does typically. Didn't really know, but I kind of like got the basis. I knew they were like a platform that was playing in some sort of like fintech investment startup type thing, like private market. I thought that was really interesting, something like I'm interested in. So I went for an interview there after I did the phone interview. I wanted to be an AE right away. There's tiers. There's like an AE3, AE2, AE1. One's the highest. Three is typically reserved for like internal. So SDRs will move to like AE3. They didn't let me be an AE3 right away. They said, all right, you can come in and be a senior SDR, but just for a couple months if you hit your quota every month. I was like, oh my God. It's probably in hindsight smarter. You really have to learn a lot before you become an AE anywhere, but especially I think here. So
talk to us a little bit about that. Like, what did you learn as a senior SDR? And when you became an AE, what were you thankful for that senior SDR experience?
It's very interesting because CB Insights, like, I don't know, people say this is a hard sale. I don't know because I've been here, but when people come from the outside, it's been so tough for them. It's been, like, we don't have a lot of success. Like, I don't want to say that, but it's been tough. And it's been way more successful coming from the inside. So I'll give one example. I didn't know there was like corporate innovation teams across the board. I don't know. I just didn't know that. Now I know that. Like, that's one of our prospects, our teams. So it's like venture, innovation, strategy. Those are our main teams. I came from like IT. So I'm learning about that, first of all. I don't need to learn how to run a Boolean search and find these people. But I need to learn, like, what do they care about? And like, who do I want for my AE? I think that takes away like at least a month or 2 months of like just learning that. Then you got to learn CB Insights and the pitch. I think these things would have been tough to throw myself in as an AE3 where you have a 3 month ramp at that time and then you're on to quota. So yeah, I think that's one thing. You learn how people talk on the phone to those people for the use cases, but also just in general, I hadn't closed before. I hadn't closed a full sales cycle. I did it at NetX, but it was a mix. Like, it was very much a mix and a lot of like hands on deck. So this was kind of solo, a new sale, learning how to forecast things like that would have taken time. So a lot of stuff, I think, in hindsight.
Very good. And so talk to us a little bit about that migration into becoming an AE.
Migration. That was great. So I said, okay, I'll be a senior SDR and I'll hit quota every month. Like, that's just guaranteed. Like, I would be there to hit quota if I had to till 8 p.m., but like, it was going to happen. So,
here you go.
So, I was like, all right, let's get that base up to 6 months or something as a senior SDR, whatever, every month. Yeah. And then I had to do an internal interview to become AE3. It's like a boardroom setting. I'm like, I know all you guys, like, you're. Friendly, but it's not today. Like, one of the nicest directors was literally like trying to be so mean. He like didn't smile, but I did it on a Friday and he like messed up at one point and I had to throw in a joke, but it was still terrifying. He was like, let's say like you get the job and like you start tomorrow, you get a bunch of accounts, like, what are you doing? Some hard ass question, whatever. And I was like, tomorrow's a Saturday though. And that's the only time where he like cracked a smile. It's like, dude, you're like the nicest guy. Anyway, so that was kind of a tough interview. You got a vibe that you were going to like get it potentially. Like, just they wanted you to get, like, they were ready for you to get it.
Well, I'm sure you came in there and crushed it doing the SDR because you had the Memory Blue skills. Then you had the skills at NetX. And then you really wanted to do it. And you're just like, I know I'm going to get there. So of course they want someone like you to do it, but they got to go through the process.
For sure. Right? I was ready, definitely. And I was, so at that point it was me who was interviewing and one other guy. We're relatively like small at that point. I think like 180, 220. So sales was a portion of that. So yeah, I got it. I got the job, but they keep you on your toes for a couple of days. This is a weekend. Like, I guess I'll either like go rage or I'll like watch TV and like think about stuff. But yeah, it was good. It was a pretty straightforward like interview process, but they kind of try to grill you. But then the work starts. Like, you gotta grind for that first 3 months. Like, that ramp is, you don't know everything. Like, you might not, it's so weird. I watched so many demos where my AEs were demoing as an SDR. And then you translate that into you demoing. And it's just so funny. Like, you either don't know where to go, even though the product, or you're constantly trying to make some sort of order. Like every call is going to go the same. And like, let me feature the shit out of everything. Let me feature demo like crazy. So now I do a lot of trainings with new AEs, like a lot. Oh gosh, I need to hit quota, guys. Like I'm doing too many trainings, but I love it. So I give intense feedback, like long list of feedback because I love it so much, but it's featured demos. Like they are so good. They're better than when I started just in terms of getting the product really fast. I was like, you know everything though, but like hold that in and remember that you're like having a conversation. Like literally, I don't know if it helps you to go on camera or whatever, but like take a step back and like just figure out like what they want. Like you could talk for like 10 minutes about the platform and sell. Like it's very interesting. I think the biggest thing is trying to order the platform. I tried to do that. I had a list. Like, then I'm going to go here. Then I'm going to go here. Nah, doesn't happen that way. That's for sure.
And you know, tell for the listeners, tell them a little bit about what CS Insights does. What problem do you guys solve?
CB Insights.
CB. Thank you.
Nah, it's okay. It is a funny title. It used to be Chubby Brain. That's what the CB stood for. They had to change that. So CB Insights, what they do. So it's a web-based platform. I know that sounds really, really specific. And teams, like I mentioned before, like innovation strategy ventures will use us in different ways, but very much like private market and innovation focused. So forward thinking. So with that, we'll be tracking private company data, which is huge. Things like partnerships, investments, all of that, valuation, if we can source it. So very much like heavy on the sourcing. Public company information, like you can find that online. We track that in like a holistic way though within the platform. And then also partnerships, like Amazon has like, 100,000 partnerships. I don't know. Like the systematic approach to that is awesome. It's what they do before they enter a new market. So we're trying to give people insights into what strategy like they need to make based on build by partner, based on tracking like trends. So we have research also. Our analyst team does research to combine with that data piece that you can use in the platform. So it's really cool. So yeah, that's like a high level of what we do.
And so who buys this stuff?
Yeah, so we're going to pivot into more of a marketplace potentially. No, I can say that. Yeah, it's public. So we might end up trying to kind of be more like, let's think about vendors. Let's think about IT. Like we're not going to Gartner. We don't want to be like traditional like that, but thinking about expanding teams, because right now, to answer your question, the teams we mostly sell to will be insights providers, which is strategy, innovation, kind of like a market research could be in there, maybe competitive intel. They're basically trying to find out like, should we go into this market? I don't know. What technologies are popping up? Maybe even companies to partner with usually. Then you got like the venture side. M&A, I guess. I don't mess with M&A and corp dev. It's not a good use case. But venture, my favorite team to sell to is corporate venture. So you think about like one of my accounts is a big bank, let's say. They probably have a venture team within the bank. It might be called something different. That's where your prospecting comes in, guys. Got to be an SDR always. You find that venture team. They're looking at startups. Like they want to maybe invest, probably invest, or partner with them. So you look at how many partnerships they've done across different maybe markets like fintech, healthcare. Like, damn, this company is sweet. It's not just a bank anymore. That's venture to me. They're doing all that, like innovation. So yeah, it's fun.
What was it like closing your first deal? Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember it. It was Sojitz Corporation, Japan. So Japan. My first deal is funny because I think they still do this very much, but I feel like my boss was like, it was like, Jesus, take the wheel. Like it definitely was demoing, but he's like, ah, they definitely are still hovering a little bit. But I needed that. Now I let go of that too quick. They tell me I need to add people to calls more. I'm like quite dependent, I guess, in that way. But that was a great deal. So we got like 10 Japanese guys on the phone. Now I know that's the thing in Japan. But that was my first call. So I'm like, whoa, we got a squad up in here. We showed like an awesome demo. They had to check, like everyone had to give a yes. It was a big deal too for my first one. Like I was very happy. It was really exciting. Like everyone was so pumped. And I closed it on like my quarter ramp. So I had 3 months to like ramp. If you close anything during that time, it was just like gravy. But I closed it on like the first month right after that. So I was like, yes, let's freaking go. It was awesome. Just great moment.
When you closed your first deal, like in that space at that company. I know you've done some stuff at the other place. Knowing that, like, what advice would you go back and give yourself, like, your first day at Memory Blue?
Whoa, that was a trippy question.
You know, because everybody spends all this time, when I close my deals, when I'm closing work. Like, knowing, so you got to that point in your career and you're living in New York City working at a venture-funded company. Like, what advice would you go back and give to Sadie, like, that first day before you walked in the pre-boon?
Are you looking to join an industry with unlimited professional opportunity? It has never been a better time than right now to start a lucrative career in high-tech sales. Memory Blue has launched hundreds of careers for accomplished high-tech sales professionals from our offices coast to coast, and right now, we're in hiring mode. Working with us will accelerate your professional growth and place you on a path to success early in your sales career. You'll get world-class training through the Memory Blue Academy program and sharpen those skills with ongoing mentorship and coaching from our seasoned sales leaders. Memory Blue is in expansion mode, and we have immediate openings in all of our offices. We have been named one of the fastest growing private companies in the U.S. by Inc. magazine for 8 straight years. Our award-winning culture has been recognized by third-party industry groups as the best in the business, as we routinely add unbelievable benefits and rewards for our team. To learn more and apply to any of our openings, visit memoryblue.com/careers today.
Pre-boon. I'd probably say, like, just honestly, I think when you sell a deal, like, I was watching my director do this, like, just listen. Like, you learn so much more from listening. I think, man, so many salespeople are just chat, chat, chat. They don't really take a step back. I think this is where being a people person comes in. Now, I don't think a lot of people are actually really good with people like they think they are. It's very emotional intelligence related. So I think just, like, listening, it doesn't mean I'm the best listener, but I'm going to crack a joke. I'm going to, like, fly around a little bit, have some fun. You got to have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a weird salesperson. I'm not like the traditional following the document. I think I'm like really pissing a lot of people off, but I want to listen to like the people and just like figure out like what like they're thinking, like what's going to help like them. I don't know. You step away from your platform or whatever you're selling for a little bit and you learn a lot more. So I would say that for sure.
And is that your most memorable win?
No.
Your first one? What's your most memorable win?
Okay, so there's like three. That's one of them because like it was the first at CB Insights.
Closed a lot of deals. Must be nice.
Another one is NetX, and this hurts me. So I sourced and like this became like a huge deal. So like I said before, like it was going to be my deal, but like also a bunch of other people who had to do stuff just because we're like, it's hardware, everything like that. So I sourced this. And it ended up being like 1.4 million or something. I was like, all right, I'm doing the math. I'm like, this looks good. So it took so long to get there. In the end, I got like 4%. I can't remember. I got like $4,000 or something. And I was like, what the hell is this shit? But it was because like during that process, Angela was doing so much work. And like, I was so thankful for that because God, it takes a lot of hands on deck. But somehow it went like more so to our partner, like Veritas got more of like the cut. Yeah, it was kind of a mess. But that like moment of being like, damn, that is a big, big deal. And like, I identified that person. I don't know. It was a lot of like pride there. And then I'd say now this one's fun. This is probably my favorite. So at CB Insights, my third deal that I'll say is Hong Kong Science and Technology Parks. Kind of wild. I don't think a lot of people would pick up that account. Picking up accounts is like my favorite thing, by the way.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
So I don't think I'd be as successful at like CB Insights truly if they just dropped accounts into my name and I had to keep those accounts, which they kind of have tested before. And I'm like, don't do it to me. I find like I read a lot. I find these companies that I just like see would want to use CB. Like I see a fit. It's probably the best thing. I'm best at that. That's the only thing I'm good at is identifying those.
No, wait, hold on real quick. You said you read a lot. What do you read?
Okay. So I'll read, first of all, I can just type in my account and put innovation. So people are lazy and they don't do anything with their account or they don't go deep enough their accounts. That's another thing. But what I read, so I'll read news like tech in Asia. I work a lot in Asia, by the way, payments.com, Yahoo for like insights. I use our platform to find out who are the biggest investors in XYZ space, or that are they tied to a corporation? Like, are they VC arm? A lot of random lists. Like, I'll look at events, innovation events, find who's speaking, who's going to those events, and then see if those accounts are free. Yeah. And then just like news in general on anything tech, like tech trends, tech crunch, stuff like that.
Loose balls, Corcoran.
I love it.
He's picking up all the hustling, diving after these loose balls.
Got all the floor burns.
Crashing into the scorer's table.
Wow. Yes, exactly. But yeah, that's very much like the insights reading too, because I got to like, I want to find some stuff, but it's fun. It's cool to see.
You're picking up accounts as Sadie just like reading and being curious as hell and calling people and emailing people.
Yeah, yeah. So like I loved Hong Kong Science and Technology Parks. So random. They're like the Jurassic Park of Hong Kong. Like I picture them all in like lab, like separate labs, but they're like tech and shit. And it's like awesome. So yeah, I love Asia too. So that's already my move. So I didn't know they were going to get like, they were going to go up to a fat deal though. The last op, like the last person that owned the account, like they were struggling for 50K. Like they didn't end up buying. Long story short, they end up buying for 266K. So it's my bit for the year, 1,000. I said K. Okay, that's fun. So for memory or for CB Insights, that's our highest package. It's called Executive. It's 265. But I worked with them on the Hong Kong dollar translation. So 266.
Right.
But yeah, it was great. I mean, I was WhatsApping my champion every day. Felt like we were in a relationship. And I don't know why he doesn't reach out anymore. Thought we had something good. But yeah, WhatsApp is what a lot of Hong Kong or like Asia will use, WeChat or WhatsApp. He would tell me secrets on there. We went through an RFP. So he would tell me like, you guys are the chosen vendor, but like, please don't email anything about that because it's not public. So I don't know. It was just a deeply built relationship. We worked really hard on that deal. Like I had a lot of hands on that, a lot of analyst work, stuff like that. But that was amazing. And it's how I got that moneymaker award or whatever it's called. Show me the money.
Yes. What was that award for?
It's for ARR. I had the highest average like deal size, basically like number, like 80,000 average or something like that, or 85 across the year. So that was Hong Kong helping me out with that 265, you know?
That's great. Out of the whole sales force, the whole team?
Yeah, the whole team.
Excellent. And you've been at CB for a while. Like what is it about there? And you're working your way up the food chain, right? Now you're an enterprise account executive. Looks like you got promoted this year. How does that happen? I mean, how many deals did you close as an AE over 2.5 years?
I got the Excel tracker. I could send it to you. No, I'm not sending it to you. No, you can find some accounts. So yeah, I started as an AE3 December, November. So you said it's been three. Yeah. So AE3 is the hardest. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's not the hardest. Your quota goes up clearly, but AE3 is when you ramp, like you figure out if this is like a fit for you. Account executive or account executive at CB Insights too. There's a lot of elements. But anyway, how you do that is like, this sounds like cliche, but it's hard work. Like I interview potential AEs now quite often for CB Insights. And it's so hard because they ask you that question and you're like, I mean, I'm being serious. Like, are you going to work your ass off? Like, I don't know. I don't know if you are. Can't like not be successful, I guess, in my mind. I'm like kind of a psycho. Like I'm really hard on myself, not in a bad way, like kind of in a motivational way, but probably too much. But I will work my ass off. Like I will if I'm into something. So you have to have that. Like that's 100%. You also have to be like self-sufficient or like want to learn some things on your own. Like you ask questions for sure, but you got to like Google something. Like we have Google. I really don't understand sometimes the questions that come up.
Me neither.
It's appalling.
You sound like Chris.
It's just crazy. It's like, why? Like, what the hell, man? My mom would be like, back in my day, we had to write a letter, but walk 5 miles in the snow to school. Everyone did that, apparently.
Use a dictionary.
But yeah, I'm getting off topic. I think.
No, you're not. This is that you're hitting on points that people need to hear.
Yeah, I think it's just like, honestly, people like blow my mind with like what they expect. They're asking me like, how many hours do you work a week? Like in an interview, like their question is like, what about work-life balance? I'm like, yo, I get it. But like, ask me some questions about like the AE role too. before like the work-life balance, because like otherwise, like I don't know what I'm supposed to tell you right now. So I think it's like, you know, in the beginning, I don't think you should even be addressing that. Like, you're coming to get an AE role. Like, I don't know. What do you want? But yeah, so when I'm interviewing people, I've learned a lot about that. You really have to work hard. You have to be curious. Use your resources. Like, that's probably something I'm not the best at, but I am in a way. I'm listening to calls. I'm doing a lot of stuff to try to get better. But you can just leverage people, like people who are good at it. Like, they close a lot of deals because they're using the right people to push those along. So yeah, I think that stuff. Be curious always. Try to get better always.
What do you look for when you're interviewing AE or wannabe AEs? Talk to us a little bit about what you're looking for. What things do you like, and what things are knockouts?
Yep. So I'm like turned off like right away. They can't like high level talk about CB Insights. Like, I don't expect to pitch at all, but like, you'd be like surprised by how many people come like that, just not knowing anything. I'm like, oh my gosh. So that just seems like another interview that they want to do. So I'd say that is my number one. Like, I'm always going to be a no if it was bad. Number two, like what I look for is, it's hard to see like hard work kind of, I feel like you can see passion though. So I don't have like a high voice. I feel like that comes across as like giddy and passionate and like crazy hype about something. And I remember Ben Dukowski was like confused with
Ben Dukowski.
He was great. But he was like, yo, you were like so chill. I was like, did she want the job? I was like, yeah, I did. But yeah, that was funny. So I guess I give off that vibe. I don't know. But I think you can see passion because somebody did their homework, first of all, probably. They're passionate. But the questions they ask, I'm big on like the questions at the end. We leave 10 minutes out of my 30-minute interview for those. You learn a lot in those questions. And I think the way they think about like just sales in general. So like, who are you guys like selling to? Like, your use case, like what do you find that customers want? Or like, who do you like face? Questions are good. But to tell you the truth, Chris, it is hard to assess like hard work on an interview. So now I've kind of seen that pan out sometimes. That's tough. I'm sure you guys know this, like interviewing people. Like, I don't know. It's tough. What do you guys look for? Do you guys get asked questions during this?
I look for, does this person remind me of Sadie? And it's a yes.
Could this person fit at Boone? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you remember you and I were talking about, you were surprised I remembered you with the PVI. And we did talk about sports. I mean, you had your basketball thing on here, but I remember you being a hustler with sports, and I remember you being from a big family. Like, and sometimes some of those things can be helpful or not. The sports thing helps. I mean, you don't have to be a professional athlete to know what it's like. Yeah. And I remember you being confident that you were good. So I was like, all right, this girl's pretty good. She's got some confidence, but like, you still have to work hard to play basketball at a Catholic school in Northern Virginia. Somebody else wants to play more than you do. So you got to kind of learn to compete.
That's true.
And then you Radford grads were sneaky smart. Tommy Gassman, Robbie Connors. Like, we got a lot of sneaky smart Radford grads at Memory Blue. So like, if you get out of Radford in 4 years, you know what? You're probably doing something great.
That's actually really true. You don't even do the fifth year loop around.
No. But it's hard to tell. You don't know in an interview how hard someone can work. But I think I wrote it down. You can't see hard work, but you can see passion.
Oh, that's cool. Right? That's going to make me sound really intellectual.
Well, I mean, you are. You don't have to act like you're not. You got that little humble vibe going. This is why you were with us for 15 months with no problems and crushed your quota. It's not bad you were with us 15 months. It's just you stuck to what you said you were going to do. That's actually a badge of honor, I think. It gives you some perspective in life.
This is a badge of honor, and I wear it daily.
Every day.
I wish I could see like some of the stats back then. You guys will have to see.
We lost you for a second.
Send them to me. That'd be fun to look at. But yeah.
Oh, your KPIs, like your calls?
And also, like you said, I hit quota every month. I want to see like the percentages. You know how I don't know if you still do it. We had that chart. You guys would send it out like once a week.
Yeah.
See our percentages. Everybody's like, God, why do you have 25% already? So fun. So if you could find
it. It is fun. You got a good two. So do you have SDRs you work with now in your role?
Yes, I do. So I have 3 dedicated SDRs.
Yeah.
And they've changed it up like over the last few years. So I've had a couple different SDRs, but it's pretty much always been like 2 or 3 dedicated throughout my time at CB Insights. Then you have some inbound every once in a while that just get routed to you. Could be a different SDR.
What do you tell those SDRs that are working for you, making calls for you? What do you tell them? What type of advice do you give them?
Yeah, a lot of advice. I really care about like us both getting better always. So they teach me things too, which is important. I try to like, I know they're going to be nervous for sure in the beginning, but I push them a little bit. I get on the calls with them a lot in the beginning, despite who it is, unless it's like a chief innovation officer, probably going to take it pretty quick. But I like to get on calls, hear them. I'm slacking them. I'm there for them, but I want to push them a little bit. I'll even tell them what to say throughout. It helps them just learn how to talk to people and that like these roles, they don't like, you don't have to worry. Like it's just a person. It's like your dad or something, not your dad, but you know. So the things I teach them though are use cases. I think it's like one of the most important things for CB Insights. You really have to like at least know high level what a venture team would want ideally versus like innovation. And then you just learn everything else. Like you have your stuff in your head. You ask if that's correct. And then you get some feedback. You go from there. Organization, very important. Teach them about organization. We don't let anything slip through the cracks. Yeah, being a human, organization, use case. I think those are the big ones I would say. And then you get into the nitty gritty of like calls and stuff and little things they could have done different. Emails, tighten it up, tighten everything up. I learned to stop putting just in my emails. I was like, what is this doing here? Somebody taught me that and I loved it. Yeah, there's certain things you can do that'll catch people's eyes. And I'm always telling them, you know what? We didn't need an 8 a.m. Like, don't give me an 8 a.m. But no, the lesson is basically their time is so important. Like just as valuable as these people. Like these people, I know they're taking a lot more money than you, but that's important. Like, don't be a like wallflower or whatever. You know, you're kind of like that in the beginning as an SDR. You like don't think you're important or something. So it comes across in the emails and stuff, your confidence. So that's important.
That's classic advice. We give that advice to people here.
Yep. The best AEs work well with their SDRs. Like they don't say my SDR works for me. Like, first of all, you're a piece of shit. Like, that's just out of control. But nah, I usually like when I close a deal, like we do thank yous on the top and stuff. I'm also like out of control with my SDRs though. I'm like, what did you think about the calls? Like, dad, I don't know. I'm very weird. Like, Yahtzee, let's go. I make them laugh too much, like on Slack when they're discoing. Like, yeah, stop flirting with this girl, you know? They look at the screen, I can tell they read it. And then they're like, oh my God, they're on video. It's horrible, but we have a lot of fun. So who do you think they want to be working with? Let's go.
That's right. Who they want to work with, right? Yep. And who do they want to learn from? You're like a perfect blend of having fun and learning from.
Oh, thank you. So are you, Mark and Chris.
Yeah. So Sadie, so another part of your role, it sounds like it's like you help new AEs learn how to demo or you give them feedback on their demo. What are some of the things that you like in demos? And what are the things that you try to get the new AEs to stop doing on demos?
Yeah. So like the feature pushing, I think everyone can be guilty of that for sure. Like I still sometimes like ramble on for sure. But I think when you have a use case, you're better at what to show. But I think it's more so like, okay, this is my biggest thing. I tell every AE this. When you jump into the platform, don't start with like a feature. Like give them a little bit of like, hey, so we're in the platform. This is like my platform. Yours will look different. Like where the hell are we? Like they don't know anything. So even when you pitch our research, they're like flying into like a fintech report. I'm like, no, back up. Go to our portal and like tell them like the cadence of the research. Like how often will they even get research? Who does it? Like, what's it on? Like, you have to start like very high level because like, assume like nobody knows shit. Like everyone's coming from Gartner, whatever, consultants, anything about like research. Like it's different though. Like talk to everyone like they don't know anything at first and then, or ask them, but like, nah, just assume, like be very high level. I hate also all the like data, like algorithm, all those like words, like when we describe certain things, it's like they're reading off of that piece of paper. Have you heard of our Mosaic score? All right, let me tell you about it. It's an algorithm by the National Science Foundation or something. I don't like all that. I'm just like, it's the way we rate like the health of a private company. And then I can like get into some other stuff. But like they're blacking out when you're starting to say that. The prospect's gone. So yeah, things like that are themes across the board. I actually have a story that kind of ties into that.
Yeah, please.
Tell us.
Somebody, and I don't remember who it was, may have been Brandon Eyring, right? That's his last name.
Brandon Taylor?
Brandon, like, Eyring? I think it's
that. Brandon who?
Eyring.
Oh, Brandon Eyring. Okay, yeah, Brandon Eyring. All right, please.
I think it was him. So we were at one of those trainings, and we did, like, a call review. Like, he was talking to a prospect. He was just starting to pitch, and then he fell off his chair. Call. He fell off his chair. He was so loud. He was like, God dang it. He's like, shit. The prospect starts, like, cracking up. Like, he's like, I just fell off my chair. I'm sorry about that. Like, now, like, he's just mad at everything. So I just think, like, that was so funny. Like, I don't know. Like, the human thing. I know it's cheesy when everyone's like, be human on the phone, on a cold call. But, like, that was so funny to the point where I was like, I got to do that, like, once a week because that was just the best. Like, think about what a prospect goes through every day. And they're like, that was the best call of my day. That guy just, like, busted his ass. I don't know. I thought that was great.
It is great.
So Sadie, Brandon's back with Memory Blue. He's in the sales manager for us. And he still does that once a week.
Oh my gosh. I bet. I think I saw that actually. I started listening to his podcast a little bit. And yeah, and he's married to Austin. You guys are forming love. You should get paid for that, right? You out.
We get them to come up here and work here. And we allow him to bring his newborn daughter on calls every now and then.
Oh, they have a daughter too? I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
That's amazing. Source of love.
That's right. Hey, Sadie, so you've been at CB Insights for 3.5 years. People, that's a great amount of time. And I love it because you've moved up the food chain there, right? You're interviewing people, you're mentoring people, you're doing all sorts of cool shit. There are people who, like, can't, you know, in 3.5 years, they'll have 3 jobs or 2 jobs, right? What are some of the mistakes. What are the mistakes, the reasons why people make those decisions to leave? These are your peers kind of in the industry, the ones you worked with at Memory Blue or ones you worked with along the way. Why do people do that? Because you've got a great thing going there and you've stuck around.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes sales, like, they will get fired.
Right.
For other reasons, like if they jump too quickly, I think they start getting, like, almost like cocky in a reverse way when they're doing poorly. Like, it's on everyone else except them. Like, they have a bad quarter and they're like, well, this company's going nowhere. So I think a little bit of selfishness probably. I don't know. But I think jumping too early, probably thinking like something else is prettier. And I'm not saying it's not. I think sales, we jump a lot for like product and things like that. Maybe growth. So there can be good jumps. But yeah, there's good and bad jumps. Like, the people I've seen have done both. Or like money, I guess, sometimes. Company size. I think me personally, like, I really have found that I'm passionate about like product and that will be important for me. Like, just what the company does. I never knew that would be the number one. And like the company, like, obviously I don't want to say culture, but like the company vibe, like the people, of course, but that's hard to assess in an interview. So yeah, products became really big to me. So I think sometimes people jump because of that too. I've seen.
That's good.
That is good.
I got a million more questions for you, but I'm curious about, you told us a little bit, but how else do you keep your skills sharp? Like, you seem that you have a high degree of self-awareness for sure. Like, what do you do to improve your game?
Yeah. So got to go on dates, keep that social up. I don't know if you guys ever said this, but they always said that, like, at the beginning of CB Insights, like, meet an age, like, dating. And I was like, what? Like, I'd be doing a lot better in my ramp than these guys. It's just, how do I keep my skills sharp? Like, I haven't even read a sales book, so I'm probably, like, not the best person to ask. But, okay, so how do I keep my skills sharp? I'm curious, though. Like, that's why I think I'm a product person, because I need to be, like, fully invested in, like, what I'm talking about for sure. So, yeah, I just actually want to, like, learn about this space, like, kind of always. And we're also cross industry. So I think also knowing maybe what like keeps you on your toes, maybe I'm a little ADD, but I like that I'm talking about like not just the same industry. I think I just realized that also. And different teams, like every call is different for me. So like, that's pretty awesome. And for me, I don't know. I think that's actually, yeah, I'm realizing that now. And then, yeah, how else do I keep my sales skills sharp? Yeah, reading a lot. Oh, I'm probably still one of the highest users of like Gawn, which is, I don't know if you guys have Gawn to listen to calls.
Yeah. Yeah, tell us about that. We have.
Yeah, I don't think a lot. I think when AEs get established, because I was reading the tracker where it shows like how many calls they listen to, maybe they don't listen as much anymore. I'm sure they're doing something else that I'm not, of course, though, because they're successful. But for me, I like listening to calls a lot to, yeah, just things that I'm not good at or things that I'm good at, but like they pitched it differently, whatever it is. I really like listening to calls. So I think that's a way that I'm improving, is kind of seeing what people are doing. And I may not take that, but that helps me like learn a lot, is like just how they navigated something.
And Corcoran, I'll take Mercedes any day of the week, man.
No doubt.
Sadie, you're a pro. You try to act like you're not a pro. I don't care if have read any sales books. I don't care if you've burnt them all. You're a professional.
I'm a wild professional, maybe. A little wild.
Fine. That works. It's working. It's getting your pleasure to work with, I would imagine. And I'm pretty sure your clients love you. A couple things and we'll let you get on with your day. Where are you going to go with this?
Are you going to ask me what my 5-year plan is, Mark?
No, I want to know, like, you're going to keep being a rep? You want to? It sounds like you'd like to manage too a little bit. You'd like to interview. Like, where's Sadie taking this thing?
That's true. I like found that I really like teaching. Like, I don't know. It takes me so much time. Like, I'm very invested in it. And I'm like, shit, I got to do my job. So
yeah.
I've kind of thought about that. I think I would need a blend of like still feeling like I'm in the sale though, which they actually do kind of have that. They definitely have that at CB Insights in terms of jumping onto calls or like, yeah, just advice giving. I couldn't be like a director that's like not still in it kind of, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I'm not ready for that yet. I definitely have like a lot of individual contributing left in me. I don't know if that's like 2 years, like whatever that looks like.
No.
But definitely I've thought for what you're saying about like managing and stuff though, for sure. And I just know for a fact that I think I'm going to want that blend at least for a bit when I do think about management.
Love it. And then final thing, women in sales.
Oh, nice.
Any client that I guarantee you that worked with you at Memory Blue or any person who's managed you, like I just said, and Chris just agreed, would they love more Sadies? How do we get more like Sadies to come into the high-tech sales world? Because that's our number one request from clients.
More women?
Yep.
Has been for years.
Because, oh, that's interesting. Okay. So I guess like how do you get more? Like, I don't know, like recruiting, like that side of it. I'm sure that's somebody else's expertise. But I guess I'd say actually look at people like me and look at our connections. Or Abby, I remember her.
Yep.
But... so that's one way. But I think also it's like, I guess your existing company and your culture, they're going to look at that. Like women probably more so, like no offense to men, but like, that's just the way it is. Like if we kind of have heard it's like a frat culture, like one way or another, you're going to have like thoughts about that as a woman, probably more strongly, your comfort level and things like that day to day, which I think Memory Blue does not have that. So but anyway, so I think it's a bit of recruiting. It's women are in tech like crazy. So, and it's just going to get higher numbers wise. But yeah, I'd say like looking at people that have been successful here, successful in the past and panning out to like their network is just a great way to do things. That's what I would recommend more than anything. Like I could give you a bunch of people that I'd be like, yeah, you should take her. Like if they were in Northern Virginia, you know?
Right.
Whatever. But yeah.
All right.
I feel like I can't answer it too well, though.
It's a hard question for me. It's kind of a bit unfair for me to ask you, but I want to ask because I wonder if you ever think about it, because there are more men in high-tech sales than there are women.
Yeah, let's get to that. Let's get to that. So it's truly like nothing I really ever think about. Like when I go to interview somewhere, I'm not like, oh, but I'm not a man. Like that's a blessing, I guess. Probably just like my mom and stuff. And like my brother's never made me like, I don't know, just the way I was raised, I guess.
Yep.
Doesn't come across my mind. If anything, it's like, do I have enough experience for this role? But never man, woman.
It goes back to your older brother picking you for football for instead sure. of your other brothers.
For sure.
He's like, I'm taking the best player available. I don't care if it's my brother or my sister.
It's so true. It's like ingrained in me. Yeah, accurate. I'm like pretty confident. Like I said, I'm quiet when I start a role or whatever. It may come across like as lack of confidence, but I'm trying to observe. And I'm actually like really afraid when I don't know one person. Just need to know one person. But anyway, so I never really think about it like me myself personally, but I'm aware of what goes on in the world and what goes on in my day to day. That will tie into like looking for a job, like the way you conduct yourself, all of those things. But in terms of a job, like we should be very much compared to like who gets it done and like, yes, who has a certain level of experience when they're coming in, but irrelevant otherwise. I think women can also, I love the pitch, like women are more like emotionally intelligent. So like they're better at sales. Like there's a lot of aspects to sales. That wasn't even me being mean, but like men aren't better because they're more direct. Like we're all over the place in terms of personality. Like the gender roles are hilarious. But anyway, so I think like when you think about somebody who just like gets it done, like they don't have to even come from like sales. You can like just get their vibe, confidence or something. But yeah, I think for me personally, I'm on a team with all boys right now, all the AU1s. Been that way for a lot of times. Sometimes a girl comes in. Yeah, I like to run that shit. No, I'm just kidding. Really good. I'm learning a lot. I don't know. I like
to. No, it's good. No, there's no right. There's no final answer. Like, this is how it's, go solve that. I just want to get your take on it.
Yeah, I think all it's right. Important to like be aware of everything, like for sure. And I'm glad that I feel this way because a lot of like women don't. And to be aware of that also, like that's something to, they hopefully they have good like bosses like you guys and people who will like make them feel like that way.
Yeah.
Their confidence comes through. Cause if you feel that way, your confidence will remain for the role. Like that's really important too. You gotta feel comfy. So yeah.
All right. Sadie, it's been awesome.
Very good, Sadie. Some wisdom.
Yeah. I don't think I was funny enough, but that's cool.
No, I think you were. I think you were great. It was very entertaining, but you dropped some nuggets there too. If people are listening closely, they're going to get a lot of good insight.
That's good. I should come back.
You should.
Yeah. You guys are so successful. I want to go to that Seattle office. Is that what it is? Oh my gosh.
You let us know whenever we'll host you. You can lecture to the SDRs. We have 220 SDRs.
Across all locations.
Across all locations. Yeah. Yeah.
Is Boone still popping or do you guys still have Boone?
No. Boone, I think Boone will eventually become a
partner. Hey, Sadie, Boone was condemned.
Boone was probably like, you got to put that on fire. After, I don't know. That was wild.
That was wild. No,
let's just say we got our money's worth.
Yeah. Oh my God. That was Mishler's test run of an office, right? Before we went to California. And it was like, dude, they're playing Nintendo and drinking beer on a Thursday. He's like, yeah, but they hit quota.
That's right. There you go. That's Mishler style, man. Look, Mishler, you were on Mishler's team, right? From the jump?
Yeah. Lee first for like just the.
Oh, that's right.
I want to say. Mishler pretty fast, though.
Oh, there's a Mishler okie doke. Mishler like ran some scam where he somehow, all legitimate, somehow he got all these top performers from other people's teams to join his team and made his team twice as powerful.
What was that?
I don't know. Lee Ryan's, who's awesome, too. No, Lee was great. But somehow, I'm Chris, right? Chris, remember this?
Yeah. I remember this.
So and you were like, it was like the Herschel Walker trade. For those who know, those listening, Sadie, you know what that is? Your brothers might know, maybe. Actually, no, they're not older than you. So, like, anyways, it was a coup d'etat. Let's put it that way. And you ended up on Mishler's team.
Yeah, he was doing that. You're right. He had a squad.
Legendary. Okay, Sadie, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Very good. Hopefully, we'll see you in the flesh down in Tyson's.
Yeah, Tyson's Corner, the ball. All right. It was great catching up, guys. If I come back, I'll stop by the office. I'll reach out to you guys.
Please do.
Taking an individual's raw potential and turning them into a thriving sales professional takes the right training. That's where Memory Blue Academy comes in. Memory Blue Academy teaches participants the fundamentals of sales development and all aspects of a lead generation role, regardless of the level of professional experience or background. The course kicks off with a 2-day intensive boot camp session, followed by a 6-week ongoing educational program. This is the program every single Memory Blue SDR undergoes at the onset of their tenure. The curriculum covers a wide range of topics, including list building, objection handling, effective sales emails, and more. Participants will be shown how to successfully execute a diverse set of sales activities in a very short time, experiencing tangible and lasting skill growth. To learn more and sign up for a seat in an upcoming session, head to memoryblue.com/academy. Thanks for listening to Tech Sales is for Hustlers. Please subscribe and leave a 5-star review after the beep.